Life Audio.
Hello and welcome to Kynos Project.
I'm Dale.
And I am Tamara.
And we are here to help you tackle ancient truths in everyday settings. Well, the listeners may or may not know that I work at a Christian media company.
What?
Yeah, and so a lot of my job entails staying up to date on the latest religious news, and particularly news that bears some sort of relevance to Christians in one way or another. And this past week, I came across a story that really, it fascinated me because it kind of involves a lot of the things that we've been discussing recently on the podcast surrounding religious liberty in America. And it just so happens that this group that is involved in it isn't a Christian organization. And in fact, it kind of caused a stir, this non-Christian group did, because they were responding to a Christian event that was being held on school grounds, on a public school grounds, in a school in Pennsylvania, a high school. And this local church, they were sponsoring a back-to-school prayer and worship night. And so they were allowed to use the school facility because the school district isn't allowed to discriminate with regard to who rents the facilities based on gender, race, religion, and that kind of stuff. So as long as like the renters meet the predetermined criteria, they get to use the space. And so this organization was like, well, if that's the case, and this Christian organization is going to hold a back-to-school event for prayer and whatever, we're going to have an event of our own. And it just so happens that the organization that was sponsoring an after-school, back-to-school event was the After-School Satan Club.
Oh.
Which is sponsored by the Satanic Temple.
Okay. Yep. I can see the intrigue in this story. Absolutely.
Yeah. So then by the same law that allowed the Christian group to hold their event, the Satanists were allowed to hold their group. And as I looked further into this after-school Satan club that's sponsored by the Satanic Temple, I looked into the Satanic Temple and I found that they're actually a pretty interesting group and not in all the ways that you would expect. So I thought today it would be fun if we looked at the life and history of the Satanic Temple, how they're interacting with Christians in the public sphere, and then maybe a little bit about how we should respond as Christians to them and all the things that they're doing.
I think you need to redefine what fun is.
It's going to be fun, and we'll dive into it in just a moment. Okay, so part of the reason why I found this story about the after-school Satan Club in Pennsylvania interesting is because it actually wasn't the first time I had heard about them. Back in February, I learned about the After-School Satan Club for the first time when they were setting up an after-school program in a school district in Illinois. And part of the reason that one was such a big deal and it made headlines was because it was actually at an elementary school. And one local resident was quoted as saying, "They took God out of the schools, and now they're letting Satan in," which is like, that's a headline right there.
Yeah.
And so the reason for this After-School Satan Club, and they kind of have different chapters of this program in different districts around the nation, is that it was a response to evangelical Bible study programs that were being, you know, offered as after-school programs at various schools. And so they wanted to, the Satanist Club, the Satanic Temple, they brought their program as an alternative to increase, quote, religious representation.
Are they actually calling it the Satan Club?
Yes. Yeah,
like, is that their marketing for children to attend this after-school program?
It's literally called the After-School Satan Club.
Okay. Because I could see if the like overarching name, like the umbrella name, is the Satanic Temple and, you know, they call it the Satan Club, but that's not exactly how they're appealing to people to bring them to this club. But it sounds like that's the name and that's what it goes by and that's what people are responding to.
Yes.
Okay.
Because it sounds really scary.
Yes.
Like, do you want your son attending the after-school Satan Club?
Whether I'm a Christian or not, that is something to be alarmed
by. At the very least, it's a yellow flag, if not a deep red flag. So, like, what are these crazy Satanists trying to do to our children? But if you actually look into it, the program, the after-school program, there's actually no religious teaching offered at the After-School Satan Club. But what they do offer is self-guided activities such as science and craft projects, puzzles and games, and they also offer lessons in benevolence, empathy, critical thinking, and creativity. So when you kind of look at their slate of activities and what they provide, you're like, hey, that actually sounds pretty great. Like, if you just take Satan out of the name,
right,
this sounds like something I'd want to send my son to.
The most offensive thing so far about what we're learning is their name. And maybe they're doing that out of spite against Christians, because it sounds like their entire movement, or if they're calling themselves a religion, I'm not sure. But the entire reason for their religion is just to make Christians mad and then just do some common good. I mean, it doesn't sound like they're actually trying to push a satanic agenda.
It's like they are and they aren't, because Satan is definitely in the name. So what I did is I did some research on the kind of umbrella organization, which is the Satanic Temple. And here's what I found. So the Satanic Temple was founded in 2012 by Lucian Graves and Malcolm Jerry. Lucian Graves, that's a great name for a Satanist. And it's actually a fake name, as you might have guessed.
Lucian as in Lucifer?
Yes.
And Graves as in, like, from the grave or something? Like, what?
I mean, it's spelled G-R-E-A-V-E-S.
Okay, so maybe not quite.
So it might be Greaves, Graves. Either way, it sounds a little bit dark. He actually started going by that name because he and his family had received numerous death threats from Christians and conservatives.
From Christians. Christians were threatening this person's life.
I mean, they might have called themselves Christians.
Okay,
identified that way. But certainly in the more conservative sphere. I can't remember his name. I couldn't find his real name. I was able to establish that his real first name is Douglas. And yeah, there's a couple of different last names that I could see him having gone by. But
yeah,
Douglas is a lot less menacing
than Lucian.
Yeah, and if you like look at a picture of him, it looks like he has like blindness in one eye. So he has like this dark cloud in his left eye, and he like wears all black, and he's got like leather wristbands. He's kind of like,
oh, so he's leaning into,
yeah, so it looks like someone who's like in a metal band, and his name is Lucian Greaves.
Okay, I'm looking at him now. Yep.
Yeah,
I see that. I mean, he's wearing gray in this picture, but okay,
he looks kind of scary, right?
Slightly. No. Yeah, a little bit.
With, I mean, the appearance, with the name, with the association of what he founded.
Douglas Messner.
That's one of the names. There's a couple different last names that I found for him.
Okay.
But this group, the Satanic Temple, is actually different from the Church of Satan. And the Church of Satan is kind of like credited with being like the founders of Satanism as a movement, religion, belief system. They were founded back in the 1960s. And the Satanic Temple, which is in 2012, they share kind of some similar foundational beliefs as the Church of Satan. But they're really a lot more public facing and they're a lot more politically engaged. So whereas like the Church of Satan has this focus more on like sort of a personal journey of self-empowerment, the Satanic Temple kind of takes that to the public sphere, and they're focused a lot on religious liberty advocacy and personal autonomy kind of in a political sense and in a public sense. But what's interesting is that neither group, the Church of Satan or who we're talking about today, the Satanic Temple, actually believes in the biblical Satan. Like they don't think that Satan is actually real. And so the Satanic Temple, it's really more of like a secular humanist group, a kind of an atheistic group, that more than like a straight up religious institution. And so they employ satanic imagery more in like as like a literary device. And in the sense of like in the original Hebrew, the word Satan means adversary. That's kind of exactly how they see themselves. They kind of exist in opposition to what they see as kind of like this arbitrary religious authority structure that has been sitting in a place of dominance in America, namely Christianity. But they would say that they aren't necessarily anti-Christian per se. They're more just opposed to the idea that any one religion would have dominance or hegemony over kind of a governmental social structure. So in America, that means removing Christianity from its place of relative privilege. And their big values are kind of skepticism, rationalism, and personal autonomy. So in a lot of senses, they're kind of more along the lines of an atheistic group.
Or right.
Of like, I don't know if you heard of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Yes.
Which is actually the spokesperson of that group. And their big like separation of church and state organization is actually Ronald Reagan's son.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
It is interesting. Huh. Like in their promotional material, you hear about like the evils of like a blurring of separation of church and state and Christian supremacy, but it's like in a voice that's like reminiscent of like the City on a Hill speech because it kind of sounds like his dad.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. But for the Satanic Temple, really, they're kind of like the Freedom From Religion Foundation, just with kind of like cooler branding, like if you're into heavy metal. And just so the fact that they use satanic imagery, the fact that that frightens and enrages conservative Christians, that's really just kind of like an added bonus in their mind.
Okay.
But they are a, they do present themselves as a religious organization, which is an interesting thing. And in 2019, the Satanic Temple, they filed for tax-exempt status as a religious institution. And the reason and the way that they did this is actually super ironic, because they had previously been hesitant to file for that tax-exempt status because of their kind of political engagement and their advocacy for certain policies and politicians that might have, you know, disqualified them from that tax-exempt status. However, after President Trump signed that executive order to loosen the requirements of the Johnson Amendment a few years back, they felt like it was safe to do so. Now, the Johnson Amendment, it was originally put in place in like 1954 or something like that to keep churches and religious institutions from campaigning for or against political candidates. And the reason and the way that they went about that is they threatened to take away their tax-exempt status. But Trump wanted to loosen those requirements so that high-profile evangelical preachers and pastors could campaign for him without fear of reprisal. But then when he loosened that, it also opened the door for something like the Satanic Temple to now say, hey, we can get that tax-exempt status because those requirements are now a little bit looser.
I think what's so interesting about everything you've shared so far is it all feels a lot like a just a giant, not a joke, but like in a lot of ways they're doing it to be funny and to make people upset, at least the conservative Christians. Like, it sounds like this whole thing was started out of spite and really to push conservative Christians to the edge. And then everything they're doing, at least so far in what you've listed, it wouldn't really outrage Christians. Like their programs doesn't sound like it's as outrageous as their name is and even the symbolism that they like to use. So was this whole thing started really just to make Christians upset? Was that the reason behind it? And then maybe it actually grew into, oh, great, like we're teaching our kids science and I don't know, all the other things you listed. But was it created out of spite for or really out of spite against Christians?
It's interesting because the founders of the Satanic Temple and a lot of other Satanist groups, there's a lot of different groups that have kind of sprung up around this. They would say, no, they didn't do it out of spite to Christians. But it's also kind of like tongue in cheek because it's like,
but they, why choose Satan? Because obviously within the Christian religion, Satan is the greatest adversary. So why is that the choice of the symbol of your religion if it's not out of spite of Christians?
Yeah, so they would admit that there's an element of satire to it, but there's also like a lot of sincerity of belief that is bound up in that. So it's interesting because it's they, and there's like a whole philosophy around like this symbol of Satan being adversarial against
a spiritual. But they don't believe in him, right?
No, it's more this the idea of Satan is lives in rebellion to the established religious authority structure. And so it's kind of like this interesting kind of play on it. And they're kind of like tongue in cheek about it. It kind of seems like where it's like satire, but it's also serious. But it's not spiritual in any real sense.
So what do they actually believe? Like what do they, there has to be some foundation of something they hold to or what ties them together as a religion.
So they actually have seven different tenets that they live by. The Church of Satan, which was founded in the 60s, they had like nine statements, but the Satanic Temple has seven tenets that they hold to. The first one is, one should strive to act with compassion and empathy towards all creatures in accordance with reason. The second one is the struggle for justice is ongoing and a necessary pursuit that should prevail over laws and institutions. The third one is that one's body is inviolable, subject to one's will alone. The fourth one is the freedoms of others should be respected, including the freedom to offend, To willfully and unjustly encroach upon freedoms of another is to forego one's own. The fifth one is that beliefs should conform to one's best scientific understanding of the world. One should take care never to distort scientific facts to fit one's own beliefs. The sixth one is that people are fallible. If one makes a mistake, one should do one's best to rectify it and resolve any harm that may have been caused. And the last one is that every tenet is a guiding principle designed to inspire nobility in action and in thought. The spirit of compassion, wisdom, and justice should always prevail over the written or spoken word. So those are the seven tenets of their religion, quote unquote. Which is interesting because we would probably have to quibble over the definitions of certain things,
right,
and the practical implications of how they play these things out.
Mm-hmm.
But like by and large, these sound pretty good.
Yeah, the list of things is not as offensive and jarring as their name. And yeah, I mean, even just the same club as an after-school program for elementary school children is rather jarring. But if these are the things that they're upholding and trying to carry out through programs or however their religion like takes shape and takes form, it's not as offensive. But you still have to think the heart behind someone to choose a name and choose a symbol that is geared towards making another religious group angry. Like, they're not as innocent as their tenets make them sound to be.
Yeah, and a lot of these tenets sound pretty good, but as we'll see as we kind of look at some of their social impact over the years, they kind of take them, those tenets kind of take them to places that Christians would absolutely disagree with,
okay,
in certain positions, but they actually take them in other places in different situations that Christians are like, oh, okay, like, I don't know if I have a strong argument against what you're trying to do,
right,
in this particular instance.
Yeah. So which, it's kinda, that makes sense. I mean, there, as you list those seven things, they sound like good things for our world and for our society. They don't sound like what you would imagine is like, let's build altars to Satan and start sacrificing
goats or whatever.
Yeah.
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 They
like
do
drinking
celebrate
blood and stuff.
Yeah. They do celebrate five holidays, and one of them, as
let
you
me
might
guess,
imagine,
Halloween.
Yeah. And the other four were stuff I didn't even recognize. It's like, oh, it was this ancient ritualistic fertility holiday in ancient Germany.
I wonder if they decided to say these are our official holidays to like lean into their name and the symbolism. Like, we have to choose some pretty outlandish holidays that need to be our holidays to like live up to the satire of what we're doing.
Yeah, that's pretty much seems like what it is, because they wouldn't even believe in like what the original belief system of like Halloween is, because they're
right,
like materialists. They don't believe,
yeah,
they're atheistic.
Yeah.
And so they don't believe
because
in souls
there's
coming
a lot
back
of
and stuff
spiritualism
like that
behind Halloween. And this whole other one that, I mean, I don't know anything about it, but if you're talking about any kind of an ancient holiday
like
in relation to a
stuff,
fertility,
yeah,
god, that is also seems very spiritual. So for them to hold these five holidays that are rooted in very spiritual realms, it just seems quite the opposite of these seven tenets that they hold to.
Yeah. So let's take a look at some of the things they've done in the public sphere, which kind of differentiates them as a satanic group from, say, the Church of Satan and other things like that. We'll do that in just a moment. Okay, so when we look at what the Satanic Temple has done in terms of their public activity and advocacy, they've actually been engaged in a number of humanitarian and philanthropic efforts that seem to have done some kind of good. One is that they have what they call a sober faction, which is a program for those who are recovering from addiction. So on the face of it, that seems like a good thing. They just kind of do it in a way that promotes self-empowerment rather than appealing to a higher power like, say, Alcoholics Anonymous or any of the other Anonymouses or, say, the Christian Celebrate Recovery or anything like that. But they are engaged in trying to help people with addiction recovery. In 2014, they launched what they called Project Protect Children, which was a campaign to support children who may be at risk for being subjected to mental or physical abuse in school by teachers or administrators through the use of punishments like solitary confinement, restraints, or corporal punishment. And I actually looked it up. Corporal punishment is legal still in 19 out of the 50 states.
Wow. And solitary confinement for children?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I guess in some of these more, typically I think in more red states like Texas and some other states in the South, there's still these practices in place in certain schools and school districts that are actually pretty fairly abusive. And the Satanic Temple is like, hey, you need to stop that.
And so these are in schools.
Yes, like in public schools, not private schools, public schools.
Wow. Okay. I mean, that sounds like a really good program. I didn't even know that was happening anywhere in our country.
And what's interesting is they're doing this good thing, like, no, you shouldn't beat kids and put them in solitary confinement in school.
And, like, restrain them.
And the people that they're going up against are, by and large, Republican Christians.
Oof.
So it's, like, this really interesting thing.
That's rough.
In 2015, they made headlines because they were offering to take in Muslim refugees amid, there was a widespread suspicion among many Americans during that time of refugees that came from a Muslim background because there was a series of terrorist attacks in Paris. Yeah. And so there was a lot of people just saying, like, hey, we don't want them here.
Yeah, we don't want to take any of these refugees because what if they are like the Taliban in hiding or something? I remember that. I remember all the arguments and people being very afraid and just a lot of fear.
And the Satanic Temple was like, fine, we'll take them. If nobody wants them, you can stay with us, which is like a really interesting thing. And all these kind of tie back to their kind of core.
Their seven tenets.
Tenet of like bodily autonomy, that like that you should be free from being abused, or that you should move freely out of a country where you're in physical danger. And so those have kind of come out in these humanitarian efforts.
Well, and I think you said their number one tenet. And maybe it was an order of priority, just an order, but that they will act with compassion and empathy toward all creatures in accordance with reason. And so it sounds like these things that you've just stated are exactly that. Like, there's compassion and empathy in a way that might even require sacrifice of their own safety or of their own, you know, security, or just sacrifice of themselves in whatever way that might look like.
Yeah, if you look on their website and any of their literature, which I was browsing through, it's like has all these like pentagrams and black and red.
Yeah.
But then it's all talking about like empathy and compassion and humanitarian effort. So it's like super jarring. It's super weird. So they've done some philanthropic things, but they have done some other things that were questionable at best. And one that was a big one was in 2013. They held what they called a pink mass following the Boston Marathon bombing. And it wasn't in response to the bombing itself. It was in response to the response of the Westboro Baptist Church, the famous Westboro Baptist Church of people who are not really Baptist and not really a church. But they had protesters that were going to picket the funeral of several people who had died in the Boston bombing at the Boston Marathon. Because to Westboro, the bombing was a sign of God's judgment because Massachusetts was the first state in the Union to legalize same-sex marriage.
So it was Westboro that was picketing the funerals?
Yeah, they were picketing the funerals. They said you shouldn't honor these people. This was God's judgment because you allowed gay marriage.
Even though the people that there were funerals for were not homosexuals?
Exactly.
That didn't matter at all.
That didn't
It was
matter.
Just the state.
It was in the state of Massachusetts. Okay. And most of the people didn't even live in Massachusetts yet. You know, they're coming in from out of town.
Well, because it's a marathon.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so,
the Boston Marathon of all marathons.
Yes.
Okay.
So what the Satanic Temple did in response to Westboro Baptists, they held a, quote, a proxy mass. And they took this from, I think they were inspired by certain segments of the Latter-day Saints. They do like a posthumous baptism of people who have died.
Can you explain what that means?
So after someone has died, they want to have them baptized. And so they have this kind of proxy baptism ceremony.
Okay. For salvation? Or
I think so.
Okay.
I didn't look into it terribly deeply.
Okay.
Other than to understand that what they were trying to do was a proxy mass, but they were trying to do it for the mother of Westboro Baptist Church's founder.
Oh.
But they weren't trying to baptize her.
Oh, no.
They were trying to perform some kind of posthumous sexual orientation transition ceremony. I don't think they were actually trying to do it.
Okay, but that the reason that's what they were choosing is because of Westboro Baptist's response to the legalization of homosexuality.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, and the way that they do that was dishonoring the people who had died at the Boston
right.
bombing.
Right, so it's now, what do you call it, where it's like, you're going to do this offensive thing, and now I'm going to match it.
Yeah, it's like tit for tat.
Tit for tat. That's the word.
But the ceremony.
Tit for tat? Nope.
Yeah, the ceremony itself was two men kissing near her grave while Lucian Greaves touched the tombstone with his genitals and chanted an incantation that, I guess, historically through Wiccans and Satanists of the past, was meant to change somebody's sexual orientation.
Oh.
And so,
I mean, that's pretty offensive, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so the move actually earned him a misdemeanor charge, and if he ever returns to Lauderdale County, Mississippi, he will be arrested.
Okay.
And when Westboro Baptist Church's founder himself died, they did this to his mother, on his mother's grave.
Oy.
And when he died, they had plans to go and do the same thing to him on his grave, but they never ended up actually doing that. So that one is just like a...
That's so bizarre.
It's such a bizarre.
It's bizarre, it's offensive, and it's petty, and that's actually not expressing empathy and compassion like they talk about.
I mean, they would say in some roundabout way that they are because
they
are
fighting for the people.
Like, yeah, they are shaming the people who are trying to shame people
for
who
their
are
sexual
gay.
Orientation.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess in their own internal logic it is, but it's a pretty weird situation. The other thing about the Satanic Temple is that they've also been a staunch supporter of abortion access, again, as they see bodily autonomy as chief among their values.
Yeah.
And in their worldview of bodily autonomy, the infant is not a person inside a woman's womb. And so since the enactment of the Texas Heartbeat Act, and the fall of Roe v. Wade, they've been trying to find a way to leverage religious exemptions to offer women access to abortion in states where they're no longer legal or they're no longer legal after a certain stage.
So they're going to try and create something that says my religion requires me to abort this baby?
Yes.
Would
so
that be the
they're
frame
framing
of
it as a religious ritual. They're framing abortion as
abortion?
A religious rite.
It's just a rite, or this is what everyone...
No, right, like R-I-T-E, like a religious ordinance.
So then every woman who is within the Satanic Temple needs to have an abortion if it's a ritual that women do?
Not that it's required, but that if they choose to do so, it's a religious experience, and then therefore should be protected under the First Amendment.
Okay, so... It's you don't want to make light of anyone's religion, but is this somehow becoming a loophole that they're trying
That's
to
what they're
create,
trying to do?
Even though it's not really a religious ceremony or any kind of a religious event for them, because it's only now becoming something they're doing because they're trying to find a religious exemption for it, right?
Essentially, yeah. They're trying to work the system.
Got it. So they're just trying to find a loophole and work it into their religion so that way hopefully they can win this.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people saying that what they're doing is actually could be dangerous to women because if they do come and under this quote-unquote religious exemption, it doesn't hold up in a court of law, then now those women are in violation of the law and there could be all kinds of legal messes that result from that because they're legally on pretty flimsy, unprecedented ground.
Yeah.
So like that's a whole thing, but they're framing abortion as a religious experience, which in itself is
it's pretty horrifying.
It's pretty satanic. It's pretty it's pretty antichrist.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then kind of apart from that, they have also sought to insert themselves in situations where kind of a civil Christian religion is present or even any kind of shades of it, really to highlight how Christianity has been privileged in America. And so they can be pretty antagonistic. So, you know, the after school Satan Club is, you know, maybe it's a good social program, maybe, but it was it was birthed out of a desire to really stick it to the Christians. And they've done that in a couple of other different kind of settings. Like after a law was signed in Florida that served to protect student-led prayers in schools, the Satanic Temple, they came out as a proud supporter of Satanist prayers, because in the law, there was nothing that stated that it needed to be a prayer of a specific religion. So they made this big public bugaboo about, you know, Satanist kids leading Satanic prayers. They've also tried to give the invocation at the Scottsdale, Arizona City Council meeting. And they're currently, I think, still engaged in a legal battle over that. So, like, when you have like a city council meeting, I've done this as a pastor, where they have someone, a local minister, come and give the invocation. It's supposed to be non-sectarian or, you know, non-denominational. But, like, if you're a pastor, you still pray in Jesus' name and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to butt up against it. Like, well, why can't one of our Satanist ministers do that?
Do this. Okay.
And they're like, no, absolutely not. We're going to have the Baptist minister do it because you don't actually have a congregation local embedded to this community. And so they created some kind of barrier that way that was kind of like, they kind of pulled that one out of thin air. So that's why there's like a legal battle going back and forth. But their effort there is essentially to antagonize.
Right. They don't care about the city council.
Right, yeah.
They're just trying to make people mad. Okay.
And then in another one, in response to a monument to the Ten Commandments that was being placed outside the Oklahoma State Capitol, the Satanic Temple, they crowdfunded an 8.5-foot tall statue of Baphomet. And now Baphomet's like the satanic symbol with the horns, and it's like some kind of goat or something. It's not a goat, it's something else. I can't remember, but it's a weird-looking Satanist thing. So they built that thing, and they're petitioning to have it enshrined in some public governmental space, because they're saying if you can put the Christian Ten Commandments,
then
you
why
can
can't
put
we
our
put,
Baphomet.
Yeah. Okay.
And so they've done similar things, you know, in different ways and in different states around the country, essentially to try and highlight where there might be a lack of separation of church and state. And the way that they've gone about doing that is pretty, it grabs the headlines. It brings attention to the issue. I mean, it's certainly a lot more eye-grabbing than, you know, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, like, circulating a petition. Like, it's just, there's a lot more intrigue to it. And so while they would say that they're not anti-Christian, they do a lot of things to antagonize Christians, particularly in the public sphere. So that's the Satanic Temple in all of its glory, all of its warts and all of its Baphomets and all. But the reason I kind of wanted to talk about this is that there's such a mixed bag, and it's tough to come back from a satanic image. But in light of all this, how do you think we should respond to, like, the Satanic Temple? Like, if the Satanic Temple sponsored an event that came to, like, our local municipality or our local school district where our sons ends up going, and there's, like, an after-school Satan club, what do you think, like, the Christian response to that should be?
That's a really loaded question. I feel like we should have started the podcast with that, so it could run.
Well, I wanted
podcast.
To make it real complicated first.
Exactly.
So that the answer is not easy.
Well, it's not easy because as you think of the freedom to attach yourself to any religious organization, obviously Christians benefit from that freedom because we are able to carry out our religious beliefs without any kind of penalty, without any kind of judgment or restrictions for the most part. And with the benefit of religious freedom comes also the diversity of other religions to have those same kinds of freedoms. And so in the same way, there are definitely different religions that Christianity not only doesn't agree with, but cannot support the fundamental principles of those religions. I mean, you think of so many other religions that are out there that some people don't even know aren't Christian religions. But when you look at what is the foundation of these religions, Christianity does not support them. I think this new religion falls under that same thing where certainly we can't support this thing, and we can't support this religion that's happening. But I mean, the messiness of freedom of religion is that other religions are allowed to exist within the country.
So if there was, say, like three different clubs at the local school, there was like the Christian after school program, there was some version of a Muslim after school program, and there was the after school Satan club. And there was like this petition circulating that the Satanic temple sponsored club should be shut down because of whatever harm to community or society they're doing. Would you sign that petition, or would you be reticent to say like, well, I don't know if we should really mess with them?
I think my thought would be the same as you survey whatever my three options of these religious clubs are. What is happening in these religious clubs? And are they a harm for our community? Right. And so if what's happening within these religious clubs is not a harm for our community, then I'm not sure I would sign that. And I think it also goes back to, certainly you're going to have the fear of a parent, right? Is this something my kid's going to be in? What are they going to be learning about in this club? But there is a responsibility as a parent for you to be able to navigate your role as not only a parental figure, but also a spiritual like leader within your home. And there are a lot of things that are going to be happening within the schools that are going to come up against and butt up against what we believe as Christians. And I truly believe that it's our job as parents to have those conversations with our kids, to guide them, to pray over them, to do whatever we can to point them in the right direction. But we're not going to be able to sign petitions and knock everything out that goes against Christianity that's going to be in the world around our kids. And so is there an opportunity to maybe pull something out of our school that we think is really harmful, not only to our own kids, but to every kid in attendance at that school? Then certainly we should be signing that petition. But if it's purely because it has the name Satan in it, like I might have a hard time saying everyone needs to rally against this and get it and sign it. I mean, maybe I'm signing petitions against every other religion. I don't know. I mean, I feel like you put me into a really hard situation here. But I think the core of what we have to remember is there's so much in our world that is going to go against the Christian faith. And our job as parents is not to do everything to eliminate those things, because then what's going to happen when your kids are not under your protection anymore, right? Like what's going to happen when they are outside of like what you can manage and what you can control? And have you equipped your kids and have you trained your kids in the ways of the Lord so that they can rationally think for themselves? And hopefully everything you've taught them can become their guiding force and their use of wisdom and the Holy Spirit can work in them. I just have a hard time with saying anything that's against Christianity, we have to do our best to knock it out of our kids' lives and knock it out of our own lives.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if it was for me, unless the group was doing something.
Like if they're doing some satanic worship, absolutely no. Like if they're, my kids drinking blood.
Yeah, I think something wild, if they're actually advocating for something violent, or
thank you, violence,
abusive,
yeah,
or harmful, I think that's where we butt up against the edges of religious liberty. Now there's people that will quibble about what can constitute harmful or abusive or violent, because you know people would petition against Christians in that sense of like being pro-life, that's oppressive, okay. And that. So there is some ideological kind of messiness to that. But I think by and large, I probably wouldn't sign the petition trying to get them out. I certainly would never send anybody there. I certainly would be maybe outspoken about the dangers of what it is that they're teaching. You know, even if these good things like bodily autonomy, to a certain extent, that's something I can support. But there are limits to that, because I don't think bodily autonomy is a supreme thing that we should champion for in all the ways that they do, whether it be through abortion or kind of a just anything goes kind of sexual ethic. And I think kind of where the rubber meets the road is it's kind of a test of our belief in religious liberty and the First Amendment value of not establishing a state religion. Like the question is, like with everything they stand for, do we still believe in religious liberty for everybody?
In an ideal world, no, you wouldn't. But we're not living in an ideal world. And if you say we no longer care about religious liberty, then you have to realize that also means for Christians.
Right.
And I think anytime we want to shift away from that understanding of what's in our Constitution to have this ability to freely practice your religion, regardless of what it is, we run into kind of undermining our own freedoms. And I just don't think that's a good place to be, is where you have intentionally undermined your own freedoms so that you can eliminate other religions. And honestly, that also leans into just a very fear-based mentality, that if our religion of Christianity is not the only one flourishing, then we are all at risk of some kind of spiritual harm. I think that's a lot of like the thinking behind it, right? Is sure, we want religious freedom, but we only want it for Christians. But that's just not how it works. Like, that's not religious freedom. That's one religion running the entire nation. And like we said on last week's podcast, that having one religion run an entire nation is not as idealistic as it sounds, right? To have Christian principles and morals and ethics be the driving force behind a nation. We have seen through history and Christian history, the church history, it doesn't end well. And I would always be cautious of starting to limit religious freedom for the gain of our own religion.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of easy to be for religious liberty when the general culture of the nation is kind of under the umbrella of Judeo-Christian values, as it had been for, you know, a couple of centuries, where, I mean, we can kind of quibble with, like, was it really a Judeo-Christian moral ethic when we had slavery and segregation and, what, you know, oppression of women, whatever it might be. But generally speaking, we were having these arguments within kind of a framework of Christendom. And within that, it's kind of easy to say, like, yes, I believe in religious freedom, that you can be Catholic, or you can be Protestant, or you can be Latter-day Saints, or you can be Jehovah's Witness,
right?
Where they all, like, more or less look the same. Like, they're different, you know, a couple of those aren't even really Christian religions. I wouldn't consider them to be, whether it's, you know, LDS or Jehovah's Witness, but they still are close enough to the umbrella family of Christendom that it's kind of easy to say, yeah, of course we support their religious liberty. I think where it's getting, you know, increasingly squeamish to support religious liberty is as we turn into more of a pluralistic society, where there are more Muslim Americans that are seeking to live out their religion in a way that's, you know, peaceful, in the way that they think is a way that's going to lead to their flourishing and the flourishing of their community and other religious groups. And I think the Satanic Temple, in many ways, it's actually accomplishing its goal in that it's highlighting something of a double standard that many Christians have had when it comes to religious liberty. It's like, yeah, you can have religious liberty so long as you're some form of a Christian. And they're kind of testing and showcasing where, like, maybe we don't believe it as strongly as we have said that we do.
And when you say we mean America.
American
maybe
Christians,
American Christians don't actually believe in religious freedom for all. They believe in religious freedom for Christians or things that look like Christianity.
And some have come out strongly recently and they've said that, whether it be John MacArthur says, we can't support religious freedom, we support the truth. Or Robert Jeffress of Dallas First Baptist, kind of this huge mega church in Texas, and he was a staunch supporter of Donald Trump and kind of one of his spiritual advisors, where he said that basically when the First Amendment is talking about, you know, freedom of religion and not establishing a state religion, like that was all under the assumption that we're more or less a Christian nation. And that separation of church and state was something that was imposed upon us by a liberal Supreme Court. And it's not something that we should support, that we should privilege Christian values and the Christian religion over and above different traditions and different religions in our society. And so there's like some people that are like saying like, yeah, you got me. I don't believe in religious liberty. But then there are others who say, yes, it's self-defeating for us not to continue to support religious liberty, even when the people who were fighting for their liberty, they really are not the kind of value systems that we want to be a part of our society. But if we limit them and kind of put them in an iron grip, that's the iron grip that we may one day
be putting ourselves in. Yeah, and I can see the argument on both sides. I can see how a Christian can say, no, I cannot in good conscience say I support religious freedom, because understanding supporting religious freedom might also mean accepting other religions are truthful or have some truth merit. And as Christians, one of our foundations is that Jesus is the only way and the only truth and the only life. And so if that is the case, then all of these other religions are not true religions. But does that then automatically mean we have to limit their role and their effect and what they're able to practice? And we've seen the church grow when it's not the dominating religion. There are so many other countries where the church is rapidly growing and Jesus is transforming communities, and that religion is not the dominant religion. It's actually the one that's people are physically sacrificing their lives for the sake of Christianity. And so I see there's a great benefit of having religious freedom, because we can freely share our faith and we can freely evangelize and we can freely talk about our faith and freely live it out. But again, it's a double-edged sword. Yeah. That's hard. It's so hard, because you want to say, yes, this is the camp I'm in. Wait, no, this is where I'm at. Because you wrestle with the spiritual aspect of freedom of religion and allowing any religion to have the same weight and the same voice and the same driving force to move policy forward, and seeing there can be a really great harm to our society and not happening, right? Mm-hmm. Like if another religion is the dominating religion all of a sudden, and the ethics and morality of our country changes, like that's a problem. But you also see, if you eliminate religious freedom, our lives and our freedom to express our religion could very much be at stake. But there are a lot of Christians in the world that are living that way. Just because they are doesn't mean I want us to. But it is also to say that the kingdom of God is far greater than limiting religious expression.
Yeah, and I think even beyond just religious liberty as kind of this self-preservation of our own liberty as Christians, I think fundamentally the Christian faith, from our vantage point of followers of Jesus, it's like non-coercive. It's non-compulsory. It's invitational. Now, obviously, Jesus is going to come back, and he's going to come back with an iron fist, and all will be brought to subjection underneath him. But that's his job. Until that time, it's not our job to impose our religion on somebody else, but to invite them. And where we do have sway, I think we shouldn't be campaigning, frankly, for something like the Ten Commandments outside of a state capitol building. I think that ventures towards the realm of going more towards a Christian nationalistic thing, when we could be spending those efforts rather than having that symbol of like, yes, you know, this hollow symbol that we are Christians, that we would actually have tangible symbols that we're Christians because we're advocating for things that are going to benefit the most amount of people in the nation. And I think to that extent, we can thank the Satanic Temple for kind of bringing that to bear and that hypocrisy to bear in a lot of us. It's like, hey, maybe we should really reevaluate where we're putting our efforts, not in a civil religion, but in a true religion, to use the words of James, that is really going to be for the benefit of all people, Christians and non-Christians alike.
Thanks for listening to the Kainos Project podcast. Thank you also to our partners at Life Audio. Visit lifeaudio.com to find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in the network, including shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more. If you enjoyed hanging out with us today, consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving a rating and review. And be sure to visit our website, kainosproject.com, for more helpful resources. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.